This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, February 5th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News and a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, a frigid one at best. But first, today's news. The move-in process has begun at the new Champaign County Nursing Home building in Urbana, but it will be a few weeks before the building is open to nursing home residents. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Nursing home administrator Andrew Buffenbarger says the move-in began last week, just days after the building passed a state public health inspection.
We've begun moving some of the supplies and some of the equipment into the new building. We have some shelving in place, and we're starting to anticipate the needs over the coming weeks so that we'll be prepared around the last week of February to start moving the final items and residents.
Nursing home residents won't be moved until after one final public health inspection, this one focusing on the building's readiness for nursing operations. Buffenbarger says that final move-in will be done in one day with lots of staff on hand to monitor residents' health and make sure no personal possessions are misplaced. The new Champaign County Nursing Home building was originally scheduled to open more than a year ago, but the opening date was delayed by problems with mold and the air ventilation system that have cost the county millions of dollars. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Despite months of student protests, the University of Chicago will not divest in companies that support the ruling regime in the Darfur region of Sudan. U of C President Robert Zimmer said Friday that the Hyde Park School will not change its investment policy. He says the school has a long-standing practice of not taking explicit positions on social and political issues that don't have a direct bearing on the university. U of C officials won't say how much of the school's $5 billion endowment is invested in companies that do business in Darfur, but officials say it's usually a small amount. Michael Pareles is a student who co-chaired the campaign for university divestment. He says his group is extremely disappointed at the Board of Trustees' decision. A bipartisan group of lawmakers will meet today in Springfield as the first step toward changing how Illinois schools are funded. Sean Crawford reports.
It's a perennial issue. The state's over-reliance on property taxes to pay for education leaves some districts well off and others nearly going under. The latest effort to change the status quo includes Roger Eddy, a Republican state representative and also superintendent of the Hudsonville School District. He says the plan is to put every option on the table because the state must find additional money for schools.
It's always difficult when you start talking about where the revenue is going to come from. The spending is easy. We can all sit and identify all kinds of things we'd like to spend money on, from additional health coverage to education to preservation. I mean, lots and lots of things. But when you get down to how are you going to pay for it, that's where it's difficult.
Eddy says he's optimistic a solution can be found during the next few months, but he says lawmakers and the governor have to make tough decisions, all of which are politically unpalatable. That could include allowing more casinos in Illinois, tax increases, or selling off state assets, such as the Illinois Lottery. I'm Sean Crawford.
Researchers say more children and teens are being exposed to online pornography, mostly by accidentally viewing sexually explicit websites while surfing the web. 42% of internet users ages 10 to 17 say they've seen online pornography in the past year. Of those, 66% say they didn't want to look at the images and hadn't sought them out. The results of the study by the University of New Hampshire appear in the journal Pediatrics. The results came from a telephone survey of 1,500 internet users between the ages of 10 to 17. Overall, 34% had unwanted exposure to online pornography. That's up from 25% in a similar survey conducted in 1999 and 2000. Never mind that it was 2:30 in the morning. This was the Super Bowl. So some 80 soldiers serving in Iraq gathered in a mess hall at Camp Victory in Baghdad to watch the Colts beat the Bears. They enjoyed chicken wings and hot dogs and cake decorated with a football field and helmets for both sides. And for at least a few hours, they could almost forget they were in a war zone. First Lieutenant Leanne Frasasso of Cincinnati said it reminded her of all the people back home who were watching the game, including her husband in Chicago. She says it was like watching it with them. But the troops didn't get to see everything the folks back home saw. There were no commercials in Iraq. just ads produced by the U.S. Air Force Network and previews for American TV shows and some special taped appearances by players to thank the troops. A longtime Bears fan from Northwest Indiana will be doused in chocolate syrup today as a result of a friendly wager between him and his brother-in-law. Chicago native Chris Kosery now lives in Rensselaer, Indiana, a city known for being about halfway between Chicago and Indianapolis. Kosery's brother-in-law, Todd Wilson, is a Colts fan. The two decided that the football fan whose team loses the Super Bowl would have ice cream toppings dumped on him. Both men, who own restaurants a couple of blocks from one another, have been selling raffle tickets for one person to do the honors later today. Kosery says he came up with the idea.
I've got a strange sense of humor, and that's where it came from. The only reason we chose a big chocolate sundae is the fact that we couldn't find a bun big enough to make a giant hot dog.
Proceeds from the raffle ticket sales go to local women's crisis center and an animal shelter. Rensselaer's location is reflected in the divide between Bears and Colts fans, although the Bears have some history there. St. Joseph's College in the city served as the team's training camp from 1944 to 1973. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bonsert. A woman in California died last month after participating in a radio station's water drinking contest. As commentator Amy Guida explains in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News, what might seem fun at first can mean major liability for promoters.
The promotion for a California radio station probably seemed innocuous enough to the uninformed. The idea was that the person who drank the most water during a three-hour period and held back from going to the bathroom during that time won a computer gaming system. But one of the contestants died. The complaint her family filed against the radio station says that she died from water intoxication, a condition medical experts say is caused by an electrolyte imbalance from drinking too much water. The woman's survivors have sued for wrongful death and for negligence. The radio station and the announcers who helped promote the contest are the defendants in the case. This isn't the first time a radio station promotion has gone terribly wrong. The most famous case in the law books concerning radio station liability for a contest is also from California. In 1970, a station with a large teenage audience ran a promotion suggesting that listeners drive around and attempt to find an announcer who called himself the real Don Steele. Here's part of one of the teases. "The real Don Steele is moving, so be on the lookout for him. I'll tell you what will happen if you get to the real Don Steele. He's got $25 to give away if you can get it." With the $25 lure, a couple of teenagers attempted to follow the announcer from one location to another. One in this hot pursuit forced a car that was not involved in the chase off the highway. The man inside the car died. One of the teens stopped. The other continued on and won the prize money. The man's survivors sued the radio station and won. The court found it foreseeable that teenagers would drive recklessly in order to be the first to find the real Don Steele. It held the station responsible for the accident, especially because there had been similar chases, what the court called a competitive scramble, in the past. There are other decisions in favor of plaintiffs where the contest outcome wasn't so tragic. In one, the radio station held a casting call for a reality show, and one contestant knocked another to the ground. The court allowed part of that case to continue. And a radio station in New York faced liability for its ugly bride contest. There, callers suggested which of the week's brides featured in the newspaper was the ugliest. The court ruled that a jury should decide whether the winner had suffered intentional infliction of emotional distress. Now, sure, not all promotions cases lead to a plaintiff victory. When a New Orleans radio station announcer helped to promote a young person's talent show and a girl died when her grass skirt caught fire, the court refused to find the radio station liable under the circumstances. And when a man argued that he deserved $25,000 because an announcer had read titles of songs and names of artists between songs, despite a promise to play three in a row commercial-free, he lost. The court let the radio station itself define the phrase commercial interruption. We don't know as yet what effect these older cases will have on the new water intoxication case. All the facts have yet to come out. But given this history and the potential for liability, if I were a promotions director, I check not only with the station's general manager before running any contest, I'd also check with the station's lawyer. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the very chilly forecast for East Central Illinois, a wind chill advisory is in effect until noon today. Expect bitterly cold conditions, mostly sunny skies, the high around 10. Wind chills of 15 to 25 below zero this morning. Mostly cloudy tonight with lows around 1 below. And very cold tomorrow, snow likely with accumulation of 3 to 4 inches possible, the high around 16, the chance of precipitation 70%. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, February 5th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wyol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.